Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established mid-career debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy. We are very excited to bring you this conversation between two powerhouses in the Love Oz YA scene, Siobhan Pelosa and Wei Chim. Siobhan Pelosa is the award-winning author of Frankie, Tin Heart, and The Boy, the Wolf, and the Stars. Her writing has been shortlisted for the CBCA Book of the Year, YA, LSA's Top 10 Best Young Adult Books of the Year, and the Gold Inky. She won the Davitt Award for Best Young Adult Crime Novel in 2017. She lives in Victoria with her cat, Fenchurch.
Wei Chim is the author of a number of YA middle grade and junior fiction titles, including Freedom Swimmer and the Chook Chook series. Her work has been recognised in the Readings YA Book Prize, the Sakura Medal and the Educational Publishing Awards. The Surprising Power of a Good Dumpling recently took out the Indie Book Awards Book of the Year in the Young Adult category. Born and raised in New York, Wei now lives and works in Sydney. It is an extra delight to be featuring these authors because they are both doing an incredible amount of work behind the scenes on the Oz Authors Online initiative, which we've mentioned before. We'll link to the website and their social media. They're hosting online launches for authors and books, particularly those impacted by COVID-19. So it's very exciting to have them here on the show. What did you like about this episode, Catherine?
Oh, I love hearing friends talk, which was always the concept behind this little mini series that we're doing. So one of the cool things about Siobhan and Wei's friendship is they've only actually met a couple of times in real life.
I love that.
It's a very modern friendship.
It's a very modern friendship, and there's so many writers who do this.
I know. I always thought that would be difficult to make online friends. Like I thought like that seemed very foreign to me, but I can totally see how that happens now.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially now that you can just then have your Zoom calls and other such things. It is very easy to be, what are they saying? Socially connected at the same time as being
physical distance, but socially sort of connected.
Exactly.
I actually love seeing people's backdrops though. I know we've touched a little bit on this previously.
Oh my gosh.
But I had a work meeting yesterday and work meetings are particularly like fine for the people that you work with, but this was with contractors and bits and pieces. So it's good. I like it.
I love it too. And you know, actually I got sent a random message by someone the other day who had been watching Q&A, and whoever was being interviewed on Q&A was sitting in front of their bookshelf where all people are sitting at the moment, and they'd spotted a copy of my book behind them, and so they'd sent me this exciting message, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll do that in the future now as well. I thought that the marketing know-how that Wei talked about was really impressive, and I always love, and we've tried to do this too, just be frank and open about the fact that it is something that you've got to do. The art doesn't necessarily speak for itself. You have to get behind your own book, etc. And having her talk about what she did in the lead up to the release of Dumpling, I thought that was really great. I'm going to go back and listen to it again in fine detail.
Also, just the discussion of how you feel Hilary Mantel apparently had her book projected onto Big Ben,
and because Hilary Mantel needs that.
I know. I'm free. Well, I mean, these guys discuss it better than I will. I can see both sides to it. I also just think, who owns Big Ben? Like, is that a government-owned?
I don't know. What's the projection, really, right?
Is that the epitome of capitalism sort of taking over?
Yeah, potentially.
Would be more if it was a church, perhaps. But anyway, is Big Ben a church or just a just a clock?
Just a clock. Isn't it on the Tower of London? Isn't it where they used to keep? Yeah. Like, there's the Tower of London, I don't know. We'd cut this out because someone will tell us that we got that wrong. You know what I loved and what I always love is the Genesis stories of how people get their book out into the world. And I loved that Waze is slash pile, and I loved the literary speed dating. Have you ever done speed dating? Literary speed dating?
I have, and it was a very unsuccessful endeavor. And it was one of those things that at the time felt life or death.
Yeah, right.
But I remember meeting an agent called Sheila Drummond, who I think has since passed away. I think she might have died last year. And so originally, the main character in the Helpline was in her mid-20s. And Sheila, from a 2-minute conversation, was like, not really a great age. Could you make her 10 years older or 15 years older? And I did.
Ha. Wow.
Yeah. So I remember always feeling very grateful to her
That's a
for
lovely
that.
gift. Yeah, I've never
Ooh.
had to go through the experience of it, but I love Siobhan's story. And I love particularly what she says about getting published, is about getting your book in front of that one person in one publishing house who's going to have that kind of gut reaction to your book, which makes them want to get behind it. And I think that's really useful advice too, because it's not quite so big. I remember thinking at times as well, like, oh, I want like every publisher in the whole world to want my manuscript. Like, but you don't, you just want
No.
one person to really love it is what you want. And it's just a matter of getting your stuff in front of that one person.
On that note,
Let's listen to Siobhan and Wei.
hello, Wei.
Hi, Siobhan. How are you?
You know what? I'm actually really tired today, and I've got no reason to be tired because obviously I haven't left the house or done anything.
But it's weird. Not leaving the house can wear down on the soul quite a bit. So I understand. And no, I empathize. But yeah. Oh, good. Thanks for inviting me to do this. I'm kind of excited.
No, I was sort of thinking, I saw someone told me about this whole friends with having conversations with friends, whatever thing is called. And I was trying to think, well, who do I want to have a who are gonna who am I gonna have a really interesting conversation with? And you popped into my head straight away. Just because I thought, obviously you're a lovely person, but also I thought we'd have some really different perspectives on things, and I thought it would be,
Totally. No, I'm really honored. I think it's going to be really fun. It's actually funny because this morning I was kind of going through my Instagram, and I still have the first time I posted a selfie of us, the first time I met you in person. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a lovely thing to reflect on. I don't know if you remember this, but when you came to Kinokuniya, I
Yes.
think, yeah, 2018, was it? 2016? 2018.
When 18 Heart came out, which,
Yeah.
no, maybe that was 2018.
That's it. That's it. It feels like an eon ago, especially now.
Because you made a good point that when we started talking about this was that we have one of those interesting modern writer friendships in that we've only actually ever met face to face twice. The first time being what you just mentioned, the Tin Heart launch in Sydney, and then your launch for Dumpling in
In
Melbourne.
Melbourne. That's right. That's right. And
The rest of the time, we have our friendship played out on social media and, Zoom calls and Skype calls, things like that. So
exactly.
it's that interesting, weird thing of where a lot of the people that you form professional relationships with and friendships with are mostly online.
Definitely. And I think it's very reflective of the whole, I think especially in this industry, I can count so many people whom I would, and yourself included, whom I would say, oh yeah, they're my friend, they're my writer friend. And I would 1,000% think of you as my colleague and my coworker. But in that kind of space, you're right, we've only really interacted online, through social media. And yeah, a couple times. But I think because it's such a not isolating, but it is kind of that individual process. Like, the moments that you do have, oh, this person gets it. And yes, you have those really, really good foundations. And I think especially with YA, we really form those very quickly. So yeah, so it's a privilege and an honor. And it'll be good to have a proper kind of conversation too.
Yes. Well, I want to hear about because I mean, my journey to being published is quite strange, but I hear you're one of the few people that had a very normal, standard journey to publication. Is that right?
Kind of, I mean, it's weird because I actually think that the way I've done it now is kind of unusual because nobody does it this way. Because my journey to my Chook Chook was published in UK by UKP back in 2012, and I had submitted the manuscript via the slush pile. So yeah. I submitted a stack of paper. It was like, yeah, it was
like in the mail.
Yes, in the mail. I posted it in the mail, so physical mail, and I posted it, and I never heard anything. And I think it was also the time when they had that cyclone and they had all the flooding back in Brisbane. Yeah. And I was like, yep, nope, the slush pile has been used to like dampen the floods. That's it. It's gone. I literally thought that because I was like, nope, that's it. There's my manuscript. God. And 6 months later, I got a phone. I got an email from their coordinator or something. I think his name was Tim. I could be wrong about that. But it took 6 months for him to say, hey, can you send the rest of the manuscript? Because the submission was only three chapters of, you know, a junior fiction book. And then I submitted that again on, oh, this time I did it in email. So we corresponded by email. Didn't hear anything. And then I think October of 2011 was when I finally got a phone call from my first publisher, Christina Schulz from UKP, and she let's publish it. And that was just amazing. And I feel like I'm the only person in who has had that experience in a long time, because I think nowadays you don't submit things by paper, certainly.
I still think of that as the normal, traditional, proper way to get published. I don't know why, but that's sort of, that's in my head. But maybe I'm just a little bit old-fashioned in my mindset. But
because what was your experience, and what was your journey?
I did literary speed dating.
Right. Okay.
So it was an event. I mean, I tried it the old-fashioned way for a long, long time, you know, starting with paper and ending with, you know, doing the online forms and stuff, and nothing was sort of coming of it. And then it's an event run by, I don't know if it's still run by both of them, but Writers Victoria and Australian Society of Authors. They run it once a year. And it's speed dating, but with publishers and agents and stuff. So you go into the room and you stand in line and you get like 3 minutes to sell yourself to
the
person, and then they say whether they want to read more or not. And weirdly, the day that I did it, the book was already sitting with Penguin on Janie Goodwin's desk, who's no longer there, but and she hadn't got around to it for a long, long time, because as we know, people in publishing are incredibly overwhelmed, busy. Mm-hmm. And this event came up and I sort of went, oh, I want to do it. So I sort of sent her an email saying, look, I am pitching it elsewhere, just so you know. And she apologized for not having had a look at it yet, but, you know, I totally understood. So I didn't sit in front of the Penguin representative on that day, but I did know her. Towards the end of it, I sat down just to have a chat with her, and she said, you know, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm pitching my book here today. And she's like, well, why haven't you pitched it to me? I said, well, someone else at Penguin's already got it, so I don't want to double up. And we sort of did back and forth saying, oh, I'll take it. No, I don't want you. No, I'll take it. And she was the one that ended up reading it and loving it and offering on it. Weirdly, the one person I didn't actually pitch to on the day was the one that took it. So that was Frankie. That she took, and then I didn't get an agent until my second book.
Okay. Yeah. No, same. I didn't end up with an agent until after all my chook-chooks, so probably like, yeah, that was wild. But isn't that interesting? I feel like literary speed dating things are very much the norm now. Like, I've certainly seen a lot of them. I haven't taken part in them, but it's so nerve-wracking. How did you feel with those 3 minutes? Do you remember what your pitch was?
Do you know what? The one thing I learned was, like, you don't go to someone you really like and really want to be published by first, because you'll be the most nervous that first time. And it probably helped that by the time I just sat down and had a casual chat with Michelle, that I was totally relaxed by that point, because I'd pitched a heap of different times. It's really nerve-wracking, and I think the mistake that I certainly made initially, and what I've seen sort of volunteered helping out run the event, and you watch people do it, and the thing that I see most people doing is that they see that they have 3 minutes to talk, and then they use that entire 3 minutes just to talk at the person as much information as they can about themselves and their book, And so it's not an actual conversation.
Mm.
I don't stop to actually engage with that person. And I think I definitely made that mistake of just talking at the poor editor or publisher or agent. So there was this whirlwind of information being shoved at them. So, yeah, I definitely was very nervous. But I
But isn't that fascinating? Because then when you had sat down to have the casual chat, that was when it was an engaging process. And that's just kind of that evolution in that. But I can see what you mean about needing to kind of like have a chat as opposed to, but it feels like you have to, in every situation, like, pour your heart and soul into and just get everything out that you've been thinking of about your book, which you're right, isn't going to be the most effective way. But then with that being said, even with a conversation, it may not be. It's hard to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And of course, now a lot of people do, like, the online competitions and stuff.
Yeah. There's, like, the Twitter pitches. Because I think most of the big publishers now just do, like, Pitch Fridays or Pitch Mondays or whatever, and you just have to pitch via Twitter, and if they ask for your submission and stuff, and that would be an entirely, that's the opposite of 3 minutes. It's like, how do you shove it into 280 characters?
And I know. I've had friends that have given it a go and sort of basically you have a look at and try and help them out to condense their story idea into the 140 characters, or 240, whatever it is now. And it's so hard. It's that trying to get that log line down, which is one of the hardest things I think you can do.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so different now. And it is apparent compared to, like, I think when we both started and how I started and everything, it's that, you know, you get your synopsis and you put your little sample chapters and you ship it and you do your thing. And it's just, the landscape's really changed. And I feel like it could be for the better. I could be wrong. I don't know. I haven't. Yeah, but it seems like, I feel like it's a lot more responsive now compared to, like, my experience of waiting and thinking that, you know, my manuscript had gotten washed away in the cyclones. You know? Like, the fact is, most people are like, if you haven't heard from us in 2 weeks, we're probably not interested, and try again. So that responsiveness, I think, is really valuable, because it's like what you did. You sat there with them sitting on it, and I'm like, well, I'm going to go pitch it to somewhere else now. And, you know, just not knowing is really hard. So
I did at one point, because I used to do a little bit of work in publishing, and at one point I was the person that sat and read the slush pile.
Right. How was that?
That was an interesting experience, because it was for a large publisher, and they only opened for short periods at a time for particular genres or age groups, and so everything would rush in, and it was just a weird experience of, but also incredibly helpful in seeing the way that people pitch themselves the same way over and over again, so that they weren't standing out. So you go, well, this doesn't work clearly, and so you sort of can use it to help yourself out when you're trying to pitch, like, seeing, you know, sort of the mistakes that people can make, but also seeing the strengths and seeing the wide range of stories and stuff that people, you know, are passionate about and really want to get published. And it's kind of depressing in a way, because you think, it's so sad. I want everyone to have their chance, but, you know, limited resources and that sort of thing. But it was certainly, it's very educational, but also very stressful trying to read through thousands of submissions that would come in simultaneously, and you kind of understand why it takes so long for people to get back to you.
Oh, definitely. Just the amount. And the thing is, there's no shortcut. There's no shortcut to reading a submission. Just somebody has to sit there and read it and make a decision. And then,
But in that said, though, it's sort of, you do get your gut feeling when you first start reading something as to whether or not there's something that's special about it that's just sort of resonating with you. And that's interesting in a way that sort of you try to ask yourself, well, what is resonating? Why am I having this gut reaction to this story or this voice or whatever it is? But at the same time, it makes it really clear just how much publishing relies on you getting your book in front of that one person in a publishing house who is going to have that gut reaction. Because, you know, if someone else happens to pick up the slush pile that day and they're not someone who can react to your story, well, then is that your chance missed, because you didn't get that one person who reacts?
It's so hard and it's so tricky, and there's no real other way to really do it. I mean, I haven't thought of any, but yeah, but it is, it, and it's true. It's hard because you want to give everyone should have that shot, and you want, you know, the stories will connect with someone, and it's about finding that audience. But then we are kind of limited in, I guess, who works in publishing, and you know, there's a whole conversation around that we don't have to get into. But you know, what types of stories resonate with that particular audience, and knowing that, and that's really hard, and it's something that, you know, and I guess it is that kind of ongoing conversation of what traditional publishing looks like and where it fits in that kind of broader spectrum of things, because it can be, yeah, challenging and difficult, I think, to kind of have those experiences and stuff. And yeah, so it is what it is. But I'm sorry, I've sidetracked slightly.
No, it's good. Well, I'm just wondering because so Chok Chok, that whole series, that's junior fiction, right?
Yes, it is. And I guess, yeah, because the one thing we wanted to talk about was because, of course, you and I both have the experience of writing to different, slightly different children's audiences and stuff. Yeah. So I started out with Chok Chok, which was junior fiction, which is it was aimed at ages kind of 7 to 9, that series. There were 3 books in that series. And then afterwards, I published Freedom Swimmer, which is young adults, but for sort of from year, I think it was like 10 to 14. And then most,
I remember thinking it was sort of that upper middle grade, lower YA sort of.
Yeah, it was definitely in that lower YA category, which was just because of the historical element and a few different things. And the characters slightly less mature for various reasons, circumstance.
Yeah.
And then Dumpling, which The Surprising Power of a Good Dumpling, which is definitely on the other side of YA, which is more upper. I think, well, they're saying 12 to 16, so not... Yeah, so kind of in that YA solidifying. But yeah, kind of having that experience of having written across those different age groups. And then you yourself, of course, are kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a lovely upward trajectory there, though, whereas I'm sort of zipping around, dipping. So I started with Frankie was really upper YA, so right at the top end because of language and content and stuff like that. And then... In between, I had some like short stories. Like one was junior fiction, like really junior, like a football story, and then one sort of early high school. And then Tin Heart was probably right in that center of YA. But then my next book is middle grade, and it's also fantasy as well. So it's I'm moving away from changing genres, moving away from contemporary to fantasy, which is a really, really big shift.
Wow.
As well.
I can see that. You kind of had like a sort of a more scattered kind of thing.
So. To think perfectly represents me.
But it works, whatever works. And it's fun, I think, to play. Mine was definitely, like my process of having kind of, my writing has grown with my books, and transparently, like, and this isn't writing junior fiction in middle grade and pitching it at the right audience level is definitely different to writing YA, which I think, you know, you have to know your audience. But I will say that when I was starting out as a writer, I did not have the control to control. So I really deeply respect how amazing you would have been to kind of start at that higher level of upper YA, because I could not control the threads of a bigger story with all the characters and all the worlds and all the kind of subplots. I had my big idea when I first started out was an urban fantasy YA, which to this day has not been published, probably for very, very good reason. I haven't looked at it, but that was what I started with this idea, but I just could not control the story correctly. And so I kind of was like, well, you know, I have this other idea and I really want to do, like, you know, I want to write. So that's where I started out with the Chok Chok series. Was that was the level I felt I could control, because it was a family, it was a small, you know, village and neighborhood. And I had to write and grow into being able to, as a writer, be able to control a lot more story to get to where something like Dumpling was. So, yeah, so that's kind of where I felt my kind of trajectory went to and everything. Funny thing, I tried to write picture books and I'm not good at picture books, and that's
they're so hard.
And
as well, I just cannot.
And I so deeply admire people who do, because everyone always thinks, oh yeah, you can start with the picture book, it's only a 400 words, 500 words, and I'm like, no, can't.
That was always the worst when the publishers I was working for, when they would open to picture books, that was always the worst, because obviously everyone thinks, yeah, I can write a picture book, it's easy, it's 500 words. Although some people still submit like 3,000 word picture books. It's, yeah, it's that weird thing. We just assume that it's easy, and it's actually one of the hardest things you can do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you, because you went from, I think the transition from Freedom Swimmer to Dumpling is probably the most interesting, because obviously you went from like historical to contemporary. Ooh. And I just sort of, just from observing you and on your author brand and stuff, it seemed like there's a real big conscious sort of shift to announce yourself when Dumpling sort of came along.
Yeah.
Was that conscious?
I think it's astute. I went into Freedom Swimmer and I fell in love with the community, like kind of because I knew I was writing kind of a young adult book, and I was like kind of looking at kind of what young adult was like in Australia specifically, and yeah, basically just fell into the Love Wells YA community and just absolutely treasured it and absolutely thought, these are my people. This is where I feel like I want to tell stories. And even though Freedom Swimmer, the book, was pitched more in the younger, sort of upper middle grade, younger YA, I embedded myself very much into the community. Part of it, I will say, was conscious in that I knew that this is where I wanted to be as a writer. And I think when Dumpling finally came out 3 years later, because there was also a book between Freedom Swimmer and Dumpling, which was part of a series. It's called Through My Eyes, Natural Disaster Zones. It was called Xiaojen, but it was like part of a series that I was commissioned to do. And so there was that other book as well, which was also kind of more upper middle grade. But Dumpling, yeah, was kind of where I wanted to get to with stories. And I think conscious is a weird word. I think it was kind of organic in that this is where I knew I wanted to go. And it was being informed a lot by stuff I was reading about in the community, talking to people in the community, and knowing that this was the space I wanted to play in. So I think when Dumpling arrived, it was kind of quiet. I'd been kind of involved in kind of Love Oz YA for a while as a avid reader and kind of member, sort of, you know. And I think that it was kind of, yeah, it was very like, okay, Wei finally has a book for us, and kind of, and she's been working on this for a while. So, yeah, so I think part of it was definitely organic and conscious, and it was, yeah, it was, it felt good. Like, I'm like, yes, this is the book that will, that I've been meaning to write. And I do feel that, like, I love all my books, but Dumpling was the book that I had been trying or felt like I needed to kind of put out there and stuff. So, yeah, so it was definitely a process to get there, but it was great. It was definitely a thing. So, yeah. But you, of course, with, because I remember when Frankie came out and Penguin, was kind of, YA in Australia was finally like trying to define itself, but Penguin did this amazing thing with the YA squad or something. Yeah.
That was Floss. Yeah, that was a very cool thing to be part of. Very daunting though, because it sort of, it felt unearned at that point as a debut. Like, why am I allowed to go on this big tour that, you know, you don't really get to see much happening of that in Australia, in YA. Sort of, I hadn't really seen that sort of thing before. So, what on earth am I allowed to to be here doing this for? But it, yeah, it gave me a really massive push and a pretty good start with my career. But yeah, it felt, there was a lot of pressure associated with that as well, to sort of live up to that expectation. And so I definitely had a full on, you know, second book stress thing going on, because it felt really a lot of pressure and stuff. But, and I think the thing with me is always, because I am someone that's, in terms of my ideas, like, they're not, I get ideas for junior fiction and middle fiction and everything. I'm sort of, and I don't know which direction to go in. And that's why it has been quite a zigzaggy experience thus far. And I mean, and there's, I've certainly been difficulties with that, in that there's been, you know, understandable levels of sort of pushback, I suppose, in terms of I did pitch one series at one point, which was rejected on a number of grounds. But one of them was, you know, no, Siobhan, we like you doing YA. We think you've got a great voice in YA, so we want you to stick with that, which I totally get in a, because there's such, and this sort of leads us on to talking about what else we're going to talk about, which is marketing. Because there's the budgets are so limited. And there is this idea of, you know, building an author brand, and that helps with the fact that there's, you know, you can't sort of rebrand yourself after every book as, oh, now Siobhan's a middle grade fantasy author, and oh, now she's a historical way, or like you can't, you know, announce yourself with that big marketing push behind you every single book. Like, I get that we don't have that kind of money in Australia to do that. And I suppose it can also be a bit disorientating for the readership as well, that they don't know that they can pick up your next book if it's for them, or all that sort of thing. So there's a lot of, there is some, like, it's sensible just to say that, but at the same time I'm like, but I want to write this.
I have this idea. And you should, I think. Yeah.
So it's that sort of weird position to be in of just, I'm just naturally not someone who's going to be writing the same sort of book over and over again. I'm not going to write the same genre.
You don't want to stagnate as writer, I think. Like, it would be like, everyone's different, but I'm with you. Like, you want to play, you want to develop your own, you want to be interested in what you're doing, and you don't want to be just be churning out something because you have some formula for it or something.
Yeah, definitely. And as a reader, I'm all over the place as well. And so that's where my interests lie. And I've always wanted to write fantasy. I didn't realize how difficult it was going to be. Gosh, just running fantasy is so hard. Because the world, you've got to create the whole world.
Yeah, there are rules, and you have to make up the rules. Oh my God. And you can't break your own rules. You have to stick to that. Or if you do, the whole thing falls apart. I've tried. This is where that drawer, manuscripts.
Yeah, I'm hoping that one comes out. Have you thought about revisiting?
I have to maybe. It's been on maybe during this whole time, because right now I'm kind of creatively stagnated a little bit. But, you know, maybe this is the time to. But, you know, there are also YouTube live streams to battles.
Yeah, exactly.
There's all that. But, yeah. No, I hear you about, like, kind of how do you, you know, that whole thing of you want to do things, but then people expect something from you as a writer, and what do you do? And I totally empathize with that whole second book thing, because Frankie did so amazing. And then, and definitely I think I feel it now more with Dumpling than I had with any of my other books. I'm like, shoot, I gotta write something else. And I kind of have nothing at the moment. I joked about 2020 being the year of the nap. Didn't happen because look at what happened to 2020. But how do you kind of, what's the trajectory of how do you keep going with that? And how do you, like you said, brand yourself and kind of think about how you kind of position yourself with your audience and what you want to do and make sure that it makes sense, I guess?
Yeah, but it's difficult, I think, with us in particular, when you're doing that for a teen and young people audience who are just, they need authenticity. Like, you can't pretend to be someone that you're not and brand something that doesn't exist. Like, people see through that, and it won't last.
Absolutely.
And so if I was just producing the same book and trying to pretend that I'm loving it and it's real and it means something to me, well,
they'll see that. No, definitely. No, I 1,000% agree. And it's also like, at the end of the day, like, as much as it makes sense for the publishers and everything like that, like, you know, and it's easy, it makes sense, but it has to be real. It has to feel right. And it has to be something that you can tell that it's something that you are proud to put out there and feel good about and everything. And it matters. And also, you know, I mean, it's who you want to be as as an author, and where you feel like you can make the most impact or feel like you can best position yourself, because our time is precious too. You know, we only get one life to do this, and we want to make sure that what we're doing makes sense and is what we want to do. No, I absolutely hear you. And it's tough. And it is one of those things that ongoingly, has to continue to evolve and develop. So, yeah.
Listen, if you're not doing any writing this year, then you can take over my marketing for me, because you did a really good job with And I assume it was stuff that you did with all the little animations and the little penguin stuff that you did. Was just adorable. I remember really noticing that and thinking, I liked your marketing push. But that was all you, wasn't it?
Yes. I Alan and Emwin have been lovely and wonderful and amazing, and they have thousands and thousands of other authors. Yeah. And I am a bit of a, like you, kind of flit all over the place, not so much specifically writing, but just life in general.
Yeah.
And I get really inspired and have wacky ideas and a very childlike imagination. So I did all of the stop motion. Yeah, I played with a lot of mediums.
Like that
and
was stop motion. Yeah. Crazy. Like just, so cool.
I'm glad. And the penguin with his ideas and his art. So much of it is, I wish I could explain that this was all part of the strategy so that I could whatever. It was me basically having wacky ideas and going, oh, this could be fun, and kind of going with it. I like to call it marketing, but I honestly don't always think that that's necessarily what it is. It's just me being me, but falling like deeply in love with projects and ideas and different mediums. But it's been really fun, and I do really enjoy it, but I don't think about marketing as like, oh, I have to make sure I put up 5 blog posts or, like I'm also a marketer. Like I obviously have the benefit of being a marketer in my full-time job, although I'm not doing that anymore. Now I'm a business system analyst. This is also a way of getting distracted and doing it. I was a marketer for about 3 years. It's funny because I do see the marketing coming in strongly, especially for Dumpling, because I've been in a marketing role during that time from when I started writing it to when it was released. And that definitely had a huge impact in how I thought about marketing and what I was going to do as a self-marketer. So while I joke about some of the wacky animations and stuff, I knew, okay, bright colors and movement and some of these producing content that's different, I was less concerned about volume, but more like you said, capturing interest and stuff like that. It was a little different to stuff that's already out there and stuff. So I think that served me well. And and I did pre-order campaigns. So I pushed really, really hard those first couple, like in the lead up, I think, to Dumpling's release. And I do think it did well, and I think I don't have numbers to back it up, but I think there was some buzz and some general discussion around it. And but also Alan and Unwin did an amazing job with that cover and that title. Like it was so catchy to start with, so I think that was, I was lucky to have that behind me as well, but it was definitely a lot of work. But
I do remember noticing it, because I am sort of aware of how much extra work extra work these days. I don't know what it was like before, but I sort of get a general sense that a lot of the marketing does fall on the author's shoulders. They want that extra push because of the lack of funds. Like it's not the publisher's fault. There's just a serious lack of funds to put behind the majority of titles, unfortunately. So the author does sort of have to put an extra push out there, you know, if they can. But like, I'm just in awe of someone like you that sort of was in that position and threw out all that amazing content, whereas I wouldn't know what to do. Like I find social media in and of itself really difficult to engage with, because I am a very introverted person.
You're very present, I think, on social media, and I think it's everyone uses it, I think, differently, but I hear you of like, what do I do? And feeling kind of paralyzed in that space and in that sense. And I totally understand that pressure, I guess, is harder, like I think now compared to before. And there's just also there's just so much stuff out there that's trying to grab your attention versus before. Oh, if you put up some posters in the bookstore, someone would see something versus, I'm not sure anyone, I don't certainly don't look at the posters. I'm looking on my phone, you know, or something. So it's hard and it's tricky.
I'm someone that walks into a bookstore and just goes to the genre or whatever that I'm interested in, and I just look at the shelf. I just want to see what catches my eye and pull it off and have a read of the blurb. Like I still pick up books that way. Like I've bought a lot of books that I thoroughly enjoyed that I had no concept of. I just saw it on the shelf and thought that was interesting. I'll give that a whirl.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, as much as like everyone says, oh my God, it's marketing, so much of it is down to just people. It's just, it's like the same thing as the publishing thing you mentioned, like something catches your eye and it's something that you suddenly find yourself reading or enjoying or kind of taking a gamble on versus, you know, you have, and you see this all the time, like big publishers spending lots and lots of money and lots of funds and resources that are limited onto these big, you know, kind of major platform books. And you kind of go, oh, and sure, it helps sales, but is it, it's a bit mind-boggling because, yeah, so much of it is about funds and resources. And then you can't really, it's hard to say. And it's a bit like what's going to work, what's not going to work. And what is, how it's, I feel like it's impossible to control. And at the same, at some point, you just kind of have to let it be and let it sit with you and do what you can, do what feels authentic, I think is. And if you don't, if one doesn't like social media super much, then there's no point like screaming at the void in social media because, and so many people do that because it's marketing. That's not marketing, but yeah.
Did you see recently that it was Hilary Mantel's latest book where they projected it onto, I think it was Big Ben or something like that. And I remember looking at that and thinking,
wow.
It's not like I am jealous in that I expect that to happen to my books, but I look at that and I think you would be a little bit miffed if you were an author in that publishing house because that book's going to sell a lot anyway.
Yeah.
What extras are going to sell based on that having occurred, and how much did that cost? And are they getting return on that cost?
How do you measure a return on that cost?
Yeah, you do see things like that and you think, oh, I think that money could have been better spent elsewhere.
Yeah.
On some little authors, like some little mid-list authors.
Absolutely.
But for the most part, marketing departments are doing a good job. And
definitely.
But you do look at things like that and you think, that's a bit much.
I think the other thing is also, like, as an author, you can take risks. Like, because when I, like, you know, we as individuals, our only risk is, you know, if it doesn't work, we don't think we're going to negatively affect our books. It's not our, like, you know, we're trying our best and we know it's not our jobs. Like, if we do something and it kind of ends up, okay, yeah, we end up a little bit sheepish and embarrassed, but we're not going to, it's not like everyone else's salaries, like our own salaries, sure. But we know that at the end of the day, this is not our job and this is not what we're specialized in. So I think there's that freedom versus I think if you work in marketing, you do kind of know, okay, this is what works and this is how we're going to do it. And you kind of do certain levels for different things. And then you have to go for big campaigns like, okay, we'll project the cover on Big Ben, you know, something to try and go a little wacky, which is tough and tricky. And I think that there is that freedom. And I do encourage people, like, as like, if you have an idea, kind of to try it out and see how it goes and not, yeah, but it's definitely challenging. And it's definitely the landscape has also changed. And especially now, you know, look at everything that's happened this year, like all the tried and true things of have bookstore events, do launches, do tours, and, you know, sign books and sign stock. Yeah. All of those are out the window now. So it's like, what do we do instead? And marketing departments, I'm sure, are just kind of going, I don't know what to do. Yeah. Everything that was in my plan is different. So
hopefully they've got things in the works. I'm sure there's
going on.
We have like run out of time, I think.
That was a good chat. We always
so we need to have another conversation like this and not record it. Just sort of, or just record it for ourselves and just, you know, play it in the lounge room and just lots of listening.
Absolutely. But this has been fun, and what a lovely idea to have a podcast and everything. It's so good chatting to you, Siobhan. And yeah, I value your ideas and they're very, yeah, it's so great to meet lovely people across the community and stuff. And this is definitely a wonderful time. So yeah.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been good. And hopefully when the travel restrictions are lifted,
we'll see each other face to face. We'll have dinner and wine and drinks and tea and all of those things. And,
excellent. All right. I will see you on Zoom.
We will see you on Zoom, absolutely, for the next event and everything. Oh, good.
All right, cool. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons.